you can win too much. And when you're at the point where literally every year it's like turn up and you win, I think you lose an edge of some type. So I think Rangers have definitely got to be favourite for the league this year.
I hope so, because Celtic have now won 9 in a row, the same as Rangers did in the 90s. And
didn't they do 10 last year? Wasn't it the 10?
No, that was 9 last year.
Okay.
So this is important to make sure they don't get 10.
Oh my goodness, the big pressure in this case. But yeah, I think obviously, I don't think they're used to the competition or the pressure of being in the lead. So I think this is going to be a struggle for Celtic, actually.
Yeah.
Anyway, listen, we're live. We're live, everybody. Brain Food live on air. It's episode 82, bringing it to you every Friday. Doing the show every Friday, folks. And we're going to keep going all the way to the end of the year. By the way, we realized, Adam and I had this chat earlier. We realized that I think show 90-whatever is going to be on Christmas Day. We were debating whether we should do a Brain Food live on the 25th of December. But you know what? We're going to do it. Yes, folks. And I might actually sit here for a little while, not like a proper marathon, but at least a couple of hours. Let's talk to a few people, have a few drinks in and out, and yeah, have a review this year, basically. So anyway, stay tuned to all of that. All right. So as ever, we start off with a bit of a sound check, folks. We're on Crowdcast. So the people who are watching this here and now, if you can hear me, can you please just say hello in the chat stream? Just let me know. We're good and you can hear the audio. That's all fine. We're also multicasting into LinkedIn Live, which I think these days is treating me rather well. I've gone back up to 1,000 plus, by the way, last 3 weeks. So I'm kind of creeping back up there. But if you can hear me on LinkedIn and you follow me in some way there, just give me a quick comment and say, yes, Hung, I can hear you fine. Audio is okay. And we'll carry on with the show. And finally, we're on Facebook group, 3,000 members there. And we actually get like 400-500 views there as well. So if you can hear me on Facebook, and we're live and we're good, just say hello quickly and let me know whether you can hear me okay. Okay, we're getting a few comments back. That seems to be okay. That's good to see. Excellent. All right, let's get on with it. So before we begin, a big word to our sponsors this week. Without our sponsors, folks, we'll not be able to run this show. So big heads up to our friends at CV Check. CV Check are a background and CV checking business, as of course the name implies, the type of business that really you need to have if you are recruiting at any type of level and at any kind of scale. But particularly in this era where we have to do everything remote, we're looking for sort of new ways and additional ways really to verify the people who we're hiring for. Very important we get that right. Please don't do that manually. What you need to be doing is getting an online system that can help you do that. I think CV Check did something like a couple of million kind of checks last year, big in Australia, big in NZ, also useful elsewhere in the world as well, and trying to break into Europe and UK and US as well. So please do check them out. I'm going to give you a link to their free demo, which you can go ahead and use right away. Okay, cool. Let's talk about our show today. We've got a very exciting one. We're going to be talking about recruiting KPIs. What's changed before and after COVID-19? We're still in the middle of COVID-19, of course, the interminable pandemic. However, we're probably getting a little bit of a pattern as to whether the metrics are starting to change. How do we actually measure recruiter performance in this new normal? So delighted to bring on some outstanding guests to help us think through this. Marissa Bryan, VP of Operations at Seed, who I can see in the chat room there. So great to have you on board there, Marissa. And also Andrea Marston, who's the EMEA Director of Talent Acquisition at VMware. And I think Andrea's with us as well on the chat stream. So going to be awesome. Anyway, before we kick off with any of that, we always review the newsletter. And I just got a feeling Adam Gordon has not read the newsletter last week because he was on holiday. He says he's busy. As you have to make something up. So did you read it? I'm going to say what was interesting last week. Just say something, man.
And see if I can answer the question.
Yeah.
Well, no, like holiday doesn't matter. I always read Brain Food. As you know, Brain Food's not work for me. This is fun. So yeah, I did. And there's three things that I wanted to talk about, really. One was something I'm getting really frustrated with. It's driving me up the wall, and it's overfitting.
Right.
So I can't remember who it was that wrote the article, but it was about overfitting in tech jobs specifically. So what that means is putting together a shopping list of 50 things that the person needs to have. And I mean, it's becoming a joke. It's becoming literally, it's becoming a meme. It's becoming like, you know, people are making jokes about it. It is something that is really creeping into out of tech and into a lot of different disciplines as well. I mean, I've seen some utterly crazy job adverts recently requesting, you know, a shopping list of skills.
Well, you shared one. You shared one the other day. It was a recruiter job, wasn't it? It was like an astonishing list of criteria, and you do wonder whether it was copy and pasted from some other job, because it says, "Why would you need an MPhil in computer science or whatever it is to do a head of TA job?" I mean, yeah, I get it. You're potentially complicated business, but presumably, you know, you don't need to be a theoretical physicist to do the job we do, you know. But
it was quantitative stuff. It was, you needed to know some computer programs and things like that, and you needed to be able to code and things like that. But actually, to be honest, with that particular job, I'm absolutely sure that no recruitment background is necessary for it. This is building a system. This is building a tech system for recruitment. With data science models and things like that. So the job title was probably a little bit misleading.
But on that note, by the way, the job is with Revolut, who are a business that obviously causes people to have strong opinions. They've obviously made A very successful as a company, so you've got to give them kudos and respect for that. However, there's been all kinds of like conversations about culture, you know, ethics and all the rest of it. CEO is very kind of clear as to what kind of business he wants to run. You know, it's literally worked very hard and do very well, but hey, it's going to be, you know, this is the thing. But yeah, I mean, when I looked at that, and I kind of respected it to a certain degree, because it is kind of Revolut, you know. They're saying, okay, this is what we're having. It's like, forget about the trends, forget about what's politically correct, this is what we're throwing at you. And it's like, okay. You know, I'd love to hear from anybody at Revolut, by the way. If you work in the TA department there, or you've got a contact, please do get in touch. I'd love to basically get an inside view as to what your business is all about, and how it operates, if indeed you care about this. So
I tagged three of them in my LinkedIn post and said, you know, could you just confirm this is definitely the job, and this is not a mistake, and this is what you actually need for this job. But I've posted the link to it in the chat. It's mind-blowing what this job is, but it's just not a recruitment job. Head of recruitment operations, but it's not really a recruitment job. The other thing that I wanted to talk about, that however, this concept of overfitting, is employers are taking advantage of the pandemic to start requesting for more and more things, and the one that's really a little bit sinister is years of experience, because it rules out people who haven't got enough experience, but it's actually ruling out people who have got too much experience. I'm seeing jobs that are like, you will have between 5 and 10 years experience. Well, what if you've got 11 years experience and you're brilliant for the job? So you're either too young or too old for this job. That's sinister. And then the degree one's a real problem for me as well. You do not need a degree for a job in any job in marketing, or in HR, or in finance. You just don't, and it's out of order.
Yeah, a lot of that, I think, is to do with controlling applicant flow rather than anything else, and that's not to forgive it. It's literally, I think, one of the problems with the current situation is obviously a big increase in a volume of applicants. Companies can't deal with that, so one of the techniques that they would try is probably create artificial barriers to deter people from applying. But yeah, it's false advertising, because if you don't really need it, then why would you say it? And yeah, Luke, quite right. Very bad for diversity, very bad for inclusion, all those types of things. I think absolutely correct. Okay, that's another show. We definitely need to set one up to talk about that. I think it's a really important one. Like, how do you advertise properly in such a way that is ethical, but also produces the sort of outcomes that you ideally are looking for? We also have to be sensitive to the fact that companies are being crushed by ad response. They don't have the ability to deal with it. And if they're obligated to publish jobs in many institutions, you know, you have to have an advertised job. You can't just say, oh, we've recruited my brother to do it. You've got to kind of say, right, it's public and available for anybody to apply. But what do you do when you get 5,000 applicants in? You can't manually handle that. Okay, another show. What else, man?
I really, really loved Roger Gorman's slide deck about unstoppable trends in specifically in professional services firms. I heard him talking at an event in Lisbon last year or the year before, and he told me that he had something crazy like 130 meetings with KPMG before he landed KPMG as a customer. I'm like, whoa, that is incredible tenacity. That guy deserves everything he wants in life.
I love Roger. Yeah, I love Roger Comerbauer. If you don't know him, go and search him on LinkedIn and go follow him. He's a really funny guy. Not on LinkedIn, actually. He's quite kind of droll there, to be honest. But he's a really funny guy in real life. So if you get the chance to meet with him, please do. And he is a very enthusiastic. I think he's got a wonderful product as well, which is definitely worth looking at for our future. It's all about mapping skills and matching people. I think in the internal marketplace can be very interesting. But yeah, the report, which I've just shared in the chat screen on Crowdcast there, definitely check it out. It's for professional services in terms of its focus, but the trends I think they're talking about are super relevant for a lot of people. Yeah. And also check out the design. I mean, kudos to how they've laid it out. It's a truly world-class kind of presentation of deep information. So two ways to look at that piece. Do check it out. Okay, one more, man.
Okay. I mean, I enjoyed the anything that starts, "Will the robots take my job?" I'll probably read it. And so I enjoyed that article as well. The answer is, so basically what you do is you put in what job you're in, and then it will give you a sort of summary of what's likely to happen in your job. We've seen a lot of this from other places. We've seen a lot of it from McKinsey and others where they've segmented all the different types of jobs. But if you want to know if your job is likely to be safe or otherwise in the next 5 years, 10 years, then it's worthwhile putting your job in to there and finding out. I mean, the simple answer for a lot of us is yes.
Yeah, did you put in recruiter? I mean, what percentage did we get? 100%?
Can't remember what percentage it was, but I mean, the answer was yes.
Yeah, you get a number. I mean, all right, so people, I've just shared it in the chat stream there. Do have a look. It is a very simple application. I think it's well worth giving a shot at. Essentially, what this does is, I guess it trawls the internet and figures out whether your job is going to be under pressure based on your job title and how automated it will be. I don't know where it gets its data, but it's a bit of fun, I think. So you can check it out and see where you stand in terms of how automatable your job is. I thought it was quite a good fun for us to check out ourselves, but maybe even a decent research tool. If for instance, you're recruiting for a certain segment, you should probably be recruiting for a segment that is quite resilient against automation, because presumably that will continue to be a place that you need to recruit. However, if you're recruiting for, I don't know, a taxi driver or whatever, probably that's going to be gone in a couple of years. So so definitely check that out. It's well worth the play, well worth the thing, I think.
I think I think that when I put in recruitment, I don't think that was a job that came up. I think the closest job was HR manager, and the answer was actually that was very, very limited likelihood. It was like 1% or something, 2%, something very, very low.
Based on the
being automated, but I'm not really sure. I think a lot of that job can be automated. Really,
100%. Anything admin related, that's got to go. And I reckon HR and recruiters do tons of admin. 30% minimum for recruiters. You know, they're literally fetching and carrying stuff. It's like it's a classic pen pushing back in the day when pens were still being pushed. 0.6%.
Yeah. All right. Really low. Yeah.
I tell you what, forget that link, folks. That's obviously just propaganda. Can't believe that.
It's been set up by the CIPD.
That's right. It's like, you know, you can make the argument that HR is safe, but I mean, to say it's like as bulletproof as 0.6%, I do have a problem with that. All right.
They're going to be doing employment contracts for robots.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, I did read an article about that, actually. It's to say that one of the things in which HR can continue is actually to expand their concept of who is working for the business to include robotic workers. So you can say, right, everything that's giving input into my business, into this business, I take ownership of. And if that's a human being, great. If that happens to be a robot, then that's also my responsibility. So you kind of become a facilities manager as well as a HR manager, which I thought was a fascinating concept. Yeah. Anyway, before we bring our smart guests on board, because God damn it, we need some additional brains on this show, man. Let's talk very quickly about the topic and just get your thoughts on this, because you're a pipeline guy. You run a product that, you know, looks at things like this. Recruiting KPIs. have they changed over the last year or so? What has remote working done? What has the pandemic done to the traditional measurements and the benchmark figures that we usually say for recruiting? Things like time to hire. How long does the job stay live? How many jobs does a recruiter need to be managing per recruiter? Those types of KPIs. Anything that strikes out to you that you thought was okay, I think this has happened, or if you've got any evidence for that, even better.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you a big trend that's emerged, and that is the cognizance that the in-demand jobs require red carpet treatment, and there's absolutely no difference to what there was last year. There are no, I've said this on this show a few times, there are no data scientists walking around with a sandwich board saying, hire me now, right? There's not. There are no scientists, there's no engineers, there's no nurses. There's a lot of jobs where it doesn't make any difference. They're in big demand, and you've got to do something in one way. The other types of jobs where there are more people than there are jobs right now, big difference in how we are going about dealing with those. So a lot more focus on assessment, a lot more focus on knockout questions and screening at the front end. Recruiters are getting deluged with too many people coming through the technology. They should be filtered better so that recruiters aren't having to deal with so many people, and there's better automated experiences coming out to candidates to tell them that they're not going to be getting taken forward and why. Candidate experience is probably at an all-time low right now because we haven't solved the floodgates are open, but we haven't got anybody standing at the gate. Like, we haven't got any bouncers at the door, and that's a big problem for recruiters. And of course the knock-on effect is candidates aren't getting what they need.
Yeah, and highly stressed candidates as well. I mean, let's not forget, a lot of these job seekers are involuntary job seekers that didn't want to be there. A lot of them actually from our industry, recruiters, HR people, and so on. And when you are involuntarily sort of looking for work and you know it's a recession, stroke depression, it's bad news, what are you going to do about it? You're going to be really, really very, very on edge. And therefore, the requirement for companies to really have empathy and care is heightened. At the same time, these companies are overloaded by responses. And how do you deal with it? Key point is the splitting of the market. Totally agree. It's bifurcated. You've got your highly skilled in demand who are now like super passive, by the way, very reluctant to move. So it's even arguable maybe they're completely dormant now. And then you've got the sort of hyperactive, involuntary job seeker in many cases that we're failing to deal with. So super interesting. By the way, folks, I'm actually running a poll on Crowdcast. So if you're interested in just dropping your voices on there, that'd be very interesting. I just took a metric. Has time to hire got longer or shorter during this period? Just put your vote in there. I'd love to see what the crowd here thinks about that. Let's bring on Marissa and Andrea. Let's get some better brains onto the show. We'll ask them what they see. And in fact, what are the metrics we need to be measuring recruiters by? It could be some of the old stuff that we talked about no longer relevant. Okay, let me see if I can go ahead and do that.
Can't wait to find out what Andrea and Marissa think about this, because I can see everybody's voting for, well, actually, I'm not going to say it.
Don't say. I mean, yeah, it's no, a prejudice, early disclosure.
I can see what's happening here, and I'm not totally sure why.
Is that poll sort of available for all to see?
I think it's in Crowdcast.
No, because I would say I need to hide that then. Do I hide that so that people can't see it?
No, we can't vote.
No, you can't vote at all. Right. Christ. That's not very good, is it? That must be Marissa.
Hi.
How are you?
Right now, really glad that it's Friday at this exact moment in time. Very happy about it being Friday. I had 2 days off this week, which just means I've crammed everything into the last 3 days of the week. So it's been a bit crazy, but otherwise fabulous.
Yeah, Adam was saying exactly the same thing. A week off, and actually you have to work that week back with chaos. And it's like, yeah, exactly. That holiday's been completely wasted. But anyway, Marissa, really good to see you. And the reason why we do this show on Friday is because, yes, we hopefully are a little bit more relaxed and, you know, we can finish today on Brain Food Live. So actually, Marissa, before we go any further, I wonder whether you could quickly introduce yourself and what you do to the people who might not know you.
Oh, you mean there are people here who don't know who I am? I thought that was the deal when I came in.
A small percentage.
I mean, I know
only your fans. It's only your fans that are here.
So yeah, my name's Marissa Bryan. As you can definitely tell from the accent, I'm an Aussie. So anyone who has anything bad to say about what the coronavirus has done to them, imagine being banned from the country you come from. That's a unique and special pleasure that all Aussies are enjoying at the moment. I live in London. I have been in Europe for 15 years, most of that in Paris. And I am currently the VP of the head of client operations at a company called Seed. We provide embedded talent teams on demand for primarily VC-backed and early-stage companies across Europe. We basically build the teams that create the products that get touched by millions. And one of the teams that we're in the process of building at the moment, that many people listening here probably have heard of, is a wee little payments company out of Sweden called Klarna, which is one of the biggest projects that we're working on. And prior to that, led TA teams across Europe for a fruit company that makes telephones, a search engine that provides your email address, and the thing that connects us all, that blue thing that recruiters use every day to find candidates. So that's what I've been doing.
I've actually got a really, for some reason, I felt some, thought something perverse then. I mean, I need to change my internet habits, I think. Okay, thank you very much, Marissa. Really
no problem.
Good to get your intro. And let's say hi to Andrea Marston. Andrea, how are you doing? Good to see you. Quickly introduce who you are and what it is you do, Andrea.
Hi, Hung. Hi, Adam. Hi, Marissa. I'm Andrea Marston, and I'm the TA Director for EMEA at VMware.
Cool. And very good to see you, Andrea. We actually saw each other last week, didn't we? So it's good that we're getting a little bit more FaceTime, I guess it is. So excellent stuff. Okay, let's talk about the topic, everyone. We're talking about recruiting KPIs. And this idea came to us because basically there was almost like getting towards a consistency prior to this year, wasn't there, about how many jobs a recruiter should on average be doing, you know, how long typically does it take to recruit a software engineer in this place or whatever. And it just occurred to me, with this huge phase shift that globally we've encountered, are those measures still the things that, firstly, do the measures make sense? And secondly, do the numbers still apply? So I wonder whether you got any thoughts on that to begin with. Andrea, let's go to you first, actually, on this. Working at VMware, I mean, global kind of connections, global sort of responsibilities. What do you see before and after? Is there such a thing as a before and after, or has it kind of remain the same?
No, lots has changed. So, I mean, we're a tech company, so we're quite tech-enabled. So we all been working from home over, you know, the last 6 months now. So we've moved to a distributed work model quite seamlessly, but there's been some changes. But we've seen our time to fill just massively decrease right at the beginning of the year because we moved everything to Zoom interviews, and it's just made it a hell of a lot simpler to schedule, to get people in the right place at the right time. So we saw a massive decrease, and then that stayed consistently low.
Can I get some numbers off you if it's not confidential? Like what date to date? Like how many days to fill has it taken to what it is now?
I can say that the average has dropped by 20 days. So that's almost 3 weeks, which is quite significant.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So and you're basically attributing that almost significantly to basically reducing the logistical overhead that previously was there, because you've got to book a room, you've got to find a time for the candidate to come into an office, and the manager has to be there at the same time, et cetera, et cetera. Now you can kind of book that in much easier because everyone's in the same kind of situation. Very interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Let's get a view from your side, Marissa. I'm particularly interested in kind of your overview, because working for a company like Seed, you know, there's multiple companies that you're dealing with, isn't it? So I wonder whether you're seeing a similar pattern, or is it a case where you've got contradictory type of commentary to make? I mean, what's your view on time to hire as a metric? Has that gone longer or shorter?
Across the company, it's been reduced across all of the projects that we're working on by 27%. So that could be anything from like 90 days for, you know, software engineers that we'd be hiring locally in Berlin to, you know, that being reduced by 27%, or here in London where the market's perhaps a lot more fluid, generally our projects are, we're able to fill software engineers in about 30 days. Even that's been reduced by 27% because we're not requiring people to travel. But I think what we have seen, and this might strike a, I might get kicked out of Europe imminently for what I'm about to say, but we have seen far, far quicker adapting to fully virtual processes here in the UK and Ireland and in some of the Nordic countries. Way more resistance to that happening in sort of parts of Western Europe, places that I'm more familiar with, like France, but equally in Germany and Southern Europe as well. So I think the companies that adapted the quickest and that moved the quickest to fully virtual processes were able to capitalize early on all of the benefits that you got from moving to that, that way of working. And I think one thing that we're seeing now that is like an emerging challenge is because in some countries the rules are a little bit more lax than perhaps they are in other countries, there's a real desire and even a little bit of bias happening where we're favouring candidates who you can meet as opposed to candidates that you can't meet. And we've had a couple of recent examples of where, you know, people really want to meet people in person. And if they can, because they're, you know, in a bubble country where they're allowed to, perhaps a little bit more preference for hiring those people. But otherwise, exactly what Andrea said, everything's quicker. Room bookings alone, I think, you know, they're taking 3 days off of hiring processes per stage, not having to coordinate room bookings. The other thing that, and Andrea, you maybe have had experience of this as well, is whereas previously everything had to be done as a panel, so all four people were required to be in the room at the same time for a period of time, now we're doing things much more staggered because people aren't necessarily all available together. So you might do half an hour with Sam and then half an hour with Susie and half an hour with Sally instead of needing to coordinate all of their schedules simultaneously, which again is a massive time suck as well.
You know what? It's amazing. Are we at the stage now where we're already like wondering like the craziness of room booking? You know, if you could recall back to how chaotic that was and being booted out of a room, or you're booking a room and there's like five people in there eating their lunch and you've got to kind of have that uncomfortable situation where you say, I'm sorry, I booked the room. Can you? It's like horrible experiences. And now we've done 9 months of this. We're thinking, how on earth did we ever try to run a business like this?
I can actually add something to that as well. I mean, I don't, you know, run a company that's the size of the businesses Andrea and Marissa are working with, but I hired a director of customer success for my business in 13 days. She did 8 meetings, 3 with me and 5 with other individuals in my organization in 13 days. And to be honest, she was a 100% match for the job, and the person that was next was a 99.999% match for the job, and I could have hired either of them in 13 days. So it's really fast. But my question for Andrea and Marissa is, what's the potential downside to this? Because if you're hiring like the very best people and they're considering your organization possibly more so than you're considering them, and the process happens faster, I just wonder if there's any impact on counter offers, on dropouts, on people not starting. And it might be too early for you to have any data on that, but it's about engagement. Is the engagement as rich when it's a truncated process or when it's online?
Yeah, forget the first minute of what Adam said. The last line, I think, was actually what he wanted to say. Has the shortened process basically caused the problem with in terms of building trust, I guess? You know, when you had a long process, as you could think about it, you know, months and weeks and months and so on, now it's like fired through in 14 days. Is it too quick for people to make that decision? Thoughts?
I can give you my thoughts on that. I don't think it has, actually, because it's not truncated so much that people haven't got time to reflect on things, but there was always a big frustration with candidates when they had to wait, or you had to reschedule meetings because so-and-so was traveling and they had to go and see a client or whatever, and you had to cancel an interview with 2 days notice. So we've been able to improve the candidate experience. There's a lot less cancellations, and we've actually seen our acceptance rate globally increase. And it's only a small amount because it was always pretty high, but we have seen a statistical increase, which is, I think, does show that we have made some impact on candidate experience. And also, I think that's a lot of that is because everyone's so focused on making that Zoom experience or the video interview experience more engaging. And people are actively trying to become better interviewers because they're out of their comfort zone. And they are sticking to a very robust process. We've seen a far more interest in making this a good experience for candidates now.
From who? From the hiring managers?
Yeah, it sounds like hiring managers, yeah. And I would say the recruiters are also quite focused on it. You know, there is that, okay, how do we make this work? How do we make sure that people are getting all their questions answered? Because everyone is out of their comfort zone, so they've had to reflect on their own processes.
A couple of things to unpack there. Marissa, I'm going to go to you with this. Basically, the offer rate. Zero change on that. Basically, no.
The same. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And but like 90% of what we hire is devs. So you probably, those people who are listening here probably know a bit about offer acceptance rates in the software development world. But very, very negligible change at all. You talked about engagement, and I will sort of just highlight two points that I just noted while Andrea was talking. If the engagement has reduced, I mean, that's entirely on us, and this is our profession. This is what we do for a living. So we should be adapting, and we should be coaching and supporting our stakeholders to be able to deliver an engaging process, even if it's online. We are a remote first company, so we hire all our people without meeting them anyway. Our recruitment organization and we've had to adapt how we do things the same as anybody else would. So I think that providing an engaging recruitment process, if that isn't an OKR or a goal for your TA organization, then you've kind of screwed something up somewhere. And then as far as like the whole rush kind of, you know, are people feeling like they don't have enough time to think about it and everything like that. Like, again, you know, if we're looking after our candidates and we're asking them the right questions, we'll give them the time, or we'll schedule that extra call with that extra person that they need to feel more comfortable about the decision. The main thing that has changed, and Andrea hopefully will share this, is the first question that people ask when we're screening at the moment is, can I do the job remotely? Do you offer flexible working? Do I have to relocate? And if you aren't offering remote working, if you aren't offering flexibility, if you aren't saying that you don't have to live in central London or central Paris or central Berlin, you are missing out on about, judging by our stats at the moment, about 35% of your talent pool are dropping out at that very first call if you've not offered that.
That's a deal breaker on the first call, isn't it?
Got like a lot of my teams are actually tracking reject reasons at screen and reject reasons at outreach, and like across the board, whether it's in the Nordics, whether it's in Western Europe, whether it's in the UK, whether it's games, whether it's dev, whether it's product, about a third of candidates are dropping out on that first call the companies that we're representing, organizations we're representing, aren't offering fully remote or some degree of, you know, of permanent flexibility.
Yeah, and I think that's probably measurable even on ads as well, isn't it? People could probably A/B test an ad to say, look, office on-premise job, and then do the same thing as a remote-only job and see what the response is. I would imagine remote-only will get significantly higher response, like by times 10 or whatever. So, okay, very, very interesting. By the way, folks, if anybody has a question for Marissa or Andrea, please do use the Ask a Question function at the bottom of your screen. Ask a question there. We're going to get to them at the end and make sure that all of your questions are addressed. On the chat stream is great. Keep chatting to people there, but we can't always keep track of the questions at that point. So difficult for us to feel.
I do notice that Lindsay said that she has noticed some businesses moving too quickly and putting talent off with the rush of the process, but it's great to hear Andrea and Marissa saying that not for the organizations they are at. I think every organization is going to do this slightly differently, but it sounds like at VMware, for example, Andrea, you've probably brought what would have been maybe too long a process back to actually what is the perfect length of process. So you've got rid of the frustrating aspects to it, which is good.
Yeah.
On that note, just before we move off to a different metric, what is now an acceptable time to hire for a software engineer, would you say? Remote only job, you know, previously that would be 90 days or whatever, yeah. Right?
I mean, if you can do it in 45, because, you know, from the first screen the recruiter does to the time that the dev, you know, and they're always, as many of you would know, going through multiple processes simultaneously, also online and virtually. I mean, if you can get it down to 45 days, you're probably doing great. In Europe, you know, I know in London things can be a little bit quicker, but yeah, prior to all of this, it was definitely 90 days. With travel, God, I sounded really Australian in my ear when I said 90, but 90 days.
Don't be ashamed of the Aussie twang, Marissa. We love it here.
Marissa, is that from first contact to offer, or first contact to acceptance, or first contact to offer?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the metrics here. We're talking about how do you measure recruiter performance. What about the volume of jobs that typically, and again, there's so many caveats, you know, I'm sure people are going to say, yeah, it depends on the type of job, et cetera, et cetera. Let's try and do some broad strokes though. Have the volume of vacancies for recruiters increased as a result of the move to remote, i.e. it's got easier to hire people? Marissa's just said, you know what, actually it's going to take half the time, previously taking you a longer time, now recruiters can do more. Have the number of jobs per recruiter increased as a result of this year? Andrea, go to you with this.
Sorry, go ahead, Andrea.
Yeah, this one's a tough one because we've actually seen an increase in hiring. I mean, I know globally across all companies there has been a decrease in hiring, but for us, we've had an increase and our team's not any bigger. And it's just changed on what we've had to deal with. So some roles still require sourcing. And that would say, the majority of the roles that we work with. But we've seen a massive increase in applications in some roles. And you mentioned that before, you know, if we're talking about things like support roles, or for example, we advertised for a recruiter and got 800 applicants, where a year ago that would have attracted maybe more like 100. So in some roles, we're dealing with a huge number of applications that still need to go through. The senior leader roles, we now get more we get a lot of applications now. We still are sourcing as well, but before, you know, the applications wouldn't really have been a big part of it.
Yeah.
We're also getting a lot of internal applications, and because they're internal, you know, we want to make sure they get that VIP treatment. We're getting an increased number of referrals as well. So the volume that recruiters are having to deal with has actually changed quite dramatically, but they also can probably spend less time sourcing. So they're still as busy as before, and they're doing even more.
I realize it was a bad question, actually. The nature of the job has changed, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Where maybe you did 10 things as a recruiter and you did them in this order of priority in terms of how your time was distributed. But what COVID-19 has done is just put a shaker against that ordering. And now suddenly you're doing them in a different order, depending on, as you say, rise in internal applicants, overwhelming response, 800 applicants for a recruiter. I mean, that's crazy. Go on, Adam.
Andrea, the obviously sourcing takes quite a lot of human time to do, but I wonder if it takes as much time as trying to manage 800 applicants. It depends. You've got to automate that to actually get any benefit. Otherwise, your dealing with 800 applicants is going to take longer than actually sourcing, you know, 15 great CVs from reaching out to people. So,
yeah.
What have you done to kind of try and deal with the volume?
Yeah, advertise for less time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an obvious one, right? But also, we've been bringing in some of our more junior people within the TA organization to help with things like screening and mapping out. And it's been helping them, you know, increase their skills. I think our schedulers are probably finding it easier as well to just schedule interviews. So some of them have started to learn a little bit more about some of the wider aspects in TA, which has been great for their development as well.
Well, it's less admin and it's more fun stuff. So everybody is doing more. Yeah, good.
Different type of question to you, Marissa. And this is about sort of the I wonder whether you might have the data for it, even if anybody does, but has anyone measured, if you're like the hiring manager workload, has that changed in any way with regards to recruiting? So previously, on-premise, hiring manager, you say, right, you're doing like 10 hours of interviews per month. What's the situation now? Everyone's remote. Has that increased, decreased? They're doing more meetings?
It hasn't really changed. We measure engineering time to hire on quite a lot of the projects that we work on. We use it as for those of you out there who focus on engineering hiring, you know that it is literally the only metric that you can present to an engineering team that will encourage them to reduce their process or shrink back and rely on testing or something like that. That hasn't changed. The amount of meetings or the amount of interviews that people are doing to make a hire is still relatively stable. I think the number of internal meetings that we have to debrief, huddles, you know, whatever you want to call it at the end of the day, hiring committees, those kinds of things are all still happening. They're just happening virtually. And we're not spending 15 minutes waiting for someone to vacate the room before we go in to have the meeting. So, I mean, we're probably winning back time, if anything. But, yeah, we haven't seen a real change in any of that.
Are meetings shorter, Marissa? Because, I'm not going to say the next bit going to say there, but are meetings shorter?
Because we're not sitting there talking about who won Bake Off yesterday or anything
that. They have to be. I think they have to be, right? Although I think we do more of them. Didn't I read something on McKinsey to say the nature of the meetings change? Because now they're more frequent, they're shorter. Firstly, the calendarized a lot more. So, you know, things will pop up in people's diaries saying, oh, now your meeting's over, the next one to come. And then there's a hard stop. But we're doing lots more of them because our availability is significantly increased. We're always available, kind of, sort of now. So that's from at a consumer level, not necessarily related to recruitment, but I'm guessing it might apply. You don't think so, Marissa? I mean,
certainly not in the structured processes that are applied for software development hiring, where you do X, Y, Z step, and then you do your huddles and all that kind of thing. Nothing really has changed in that space, other than maybe there could be some time saved by not having lunch. You know, like there's a lot of lunches and coffees that might happen on an on-site interview day. So obviously those aren't happening at the moment. But otherwise, like, you know, from my own team's experience, again, because we're remote, we're probably a bit more accustomed to doing everything online and having short, sharp meetings. It's not had a tremendous impact on our on the amount of recruiter workload or anything like that. The one thing that has changed is because people are hiring quicker, they can make more hires in a time period. So when you're setting targets and KPIs for recruiters, you're probably able to set targets slightly higher because they can hire more people in that period of time. So that's the change that we've made. Much to the chagrin of at least 45 people who are on this stream right now.
Yeah, you got to do more. No, you don't. but then again, we've got also factor in the makeup of the job changing, right? So if you're in a situation, as we discussed about 10 minutes ago, maybe there's some other measures that need to go in there. For instance, if you're handling internal applications at a higher volume and presuming that you need to give more concierge service to an internal applicant, I think we would all agree that that's required. You can't treat a candidate is not the same compared to, let's say, an applicant from outside in. Maybe the initial kind of commitment that the recruiter needs to spend is going to differentiate because of the relationship that is different between the two. So is that time to introduce a different metric then, Andrea? I mean, do you differentiate between the types of candidate or the source of candidate? And that implies, actually this person needs 10 hours rather than two because they, are been working in the business for 5 years or whatever.
No, definitely not. And something I feel really strongly about actually is that internal and external candidates need to be treated the same in the interview process. I think... Sometimes the internal applicant will get maybe slightly different feedback because there will be a developmental aspect to it. So it should be, what feedback is actually going to go back to you and to your current manager if you're not going to get the role. But in terms of the process, it should be robust, it should be consistent. An internal applicant and an external applicant should be considered in exactly the same way. There might have different things that they're going to bring to the role, one's going to certainly have the experience in the organization. They might have some great connections, but that doesn't trump absolutely everything else. So all those things need to be weighed up with a robust process. And just coming back to your point about size of the length of interviews and meetings, I mean, we have changed our process that we'd say, right, it has to be 50 minutes rather than an hour. And if you've got a candidate in back-to-back interviews or in some way, they should be getting that 10-minute break as well. I think that's really important for people to be able to give them the opportunity to be their best and not just sitting through it. We've all done that, haven't we? You know, the back-to-back Zoom calls for 3 hours and how tiring that is. We don't want people to have that candidate experience.
No. You know, that's one thing calendar software needs to get better at, because right now it's like hyper-optimized for every minute. And then you get some idiot that sees you very busy, massively busy day, and it just slots in that 30 minutes that you had for a toilet break. And you think, oh my God, have you zero understanding of human biology? And you know, what you need is like something that to work out. Oh, this person has literally done 7 hours worth of video calls. Probably we need not to schedule something in, like a smart tool that helps you do that. Go and build that, somebody, if you're listening. Anyway.
My problem is though, because I have that, and somebody will see a 15-minute slot. And what I just tell them is, just look at my calendar and put it in. When somebody emails me, somebody in my team messages me and says, when are you free to do such and such? I'm like, just put it in my diary. And they absolutely do that. It's a problem.
It's difficult, isn't it? Okay, we've got loads of questions. I want to get to them, but let me just ask Marissa and Andrew one more. Adam, you can ask a few as well. But this one I'm keen on. Like, has there been a metric that you now realize is important that you didn't do before? Or at least it wasn't necessarily on the radar screen, but COVID-19 has really elevated this as something that you need to care about, recruiting metric. Any thoughts on that? Adam, feel free to answer this one as well, actually, from your perspective as on the vendor side, really.
I will, like, this is my personal opinion. It's not something that, we are advocating to our clients, but it's not necessarily something that we can always control. The world's a bit shit for a lot of people right now. And like Andrea, I just recruited recruiters, and we were getting, you know, dozens of applications every day, and people have got, you know, really rough stories that they're sharing. So if you aren't prioritizing candidate care and doing candidate experience surveys, which we've launched in two of our partnerships over the last 2 months as well, where they didn't previously have a candidate experience survey, I think it's really important to be a good human all of the time, but especially to be a good human right now, I think is something that all TA leaders should be prioritizing. So we are obviously paying close attention to that. And equally, probably the one KPI that we're very, very focused on is also hiring manager satisfaction or you know, generally, you know, how happy are they with the experience that they're having through the recruitment process? Because to your point, Hung, there are a lot of things going on. You know, in some of the partnerships we have, like Andrea was saying, hiring has accelerated, you know, in a lot of tech companies across Europe right now, and hiring managers, you know, things like interview fatigue, you know, which then, you know, weighs heavily on the candidate experience as well. But they're the two things that I would say we've probably put front and center a lot more than some of the schmicky stuff around offer accept and all of that, because the changes in those things have largely happened not for anything that we've done. It's not an action that we've taken that has caused time to hire to reduce, whereas we can directly impact those more qualitative measures.
A quick one before I go to you with this, Andrea. Marissa, these surveys in terms of hiring manager satisfaction, candidate satisfaction, can you give us a quick sort of a scorecard? I mean, how does your scorecard work? Is it like a color scheme?
Almost all of the ones that we do are NPS-based. So the net promoter scores, or, you know, how status, would you recommend us? Would you recommend your recruiter? And that's sort of the most, I mean, again, from my experience, it's the most sort of universally accepted way to get a fair, objective opinion. You can then start going into, you know, the nitty gritty of a process, but, you know, then you perhaps just measuring for measurement's sake rather than actually to get the sentiment of the service that you're providing.
Yep, excellent. Okay, to you, Andrea, a KPI that basically has now come, you know, very evident to you that's super important that maybe wasn't before?
I don't think there's anything new that's become more important, well, that we're tracking now that we weren't tracking before as such. NPS is really important to us as well. And I think there's a focus on that because the candidate experience has been something we were looking at before. And with this increase in volume and applications, it's going to have a knock-on effect. But I think we have dealt with far more emotional candidates as well. So who have been upset that they're not getting detailed feedback, even though, you know, they were never even strong enough to be interviewed. And we just can't deal with that kind of volume. So we've been looking at, you know, how can we best deal with that so that there is a strong candidate experience, a strong employer brand, but we can scale as well. That's become the key issue.
That's going to be a really interesting show to talk about. Like, how do you handle volume application at the same time as managing and having an elevated standard of candidate care? And being sensitive to involuntary job seekers being highly stressed, you know, everyone's stressed, but if you're involuntarily looking for work, your stress is like really amplified, but sometimes to an irrational point, because maybe it's legit that you cannot expect concierge service every time. So how do we manage that expectation? How do we provide, you know, the information people need, and still be able to function as a business. So, super interesting. Okay, Adam, I think you were about to say something, man. And now is the moment.
Yeah, okay, I was. I just quickly add one metric, which I've seen as being some recruitment leaders have had a little bit more time to look at. Actually, how am I running my team and how am I running my organization here? And pipeline health is something that I can see. In terms of like in-demand hiring, pipeline health is something that I think people have been focusing on a little bit more. But my question was going to be, and I don't want to come across as some sort of basic Neanderthal here, but this is a very straightforward question. And I know I'm going to say this phrase and everyone's going to go, why are you living in the dark ages or whatever? But is cost per hire something that is just no longer of any interest or importance to anybody? And but if it is, then is it something that looks different this year or not really?
We still measure cost per hire. We've got a finance department. You know, it's not going to go away. But, you know, has it decreased this year? It probably has. But, you know, is that... I don't think we take into account things like, you know, the amount of travel that we might be paying for and all those aspects. That doesn't really come into our cost per hire. So so the decrease in it will be down to better efficiencies as opposed to by the pandemic, I think.
Yeah, I think if you've reduced, to use Marissa's metric there, it's stuck in my head, if you've gone from 90 days to 45 days, that saving of time just tells me it's got to be cheaper for everyone to get through it. And even your example, Adam, 8 interaction points in 14 days or whatever, all done remotely without traveling. That's got to mean, you know, reduction of cost per hire. So maybe whatever number we had, I don't know what the figure was. Someone, this crazy fool, did it like a crazy, right? Every single pound spent on recruiting, every single person recruited and came out with like £4,000 or something per hire. Maybe that's lower now. I don't know. Okay, listen, we've got loads of questions. So let's dive into them straight away before we let these two ladies go. I'm going to go through these in order. Adam, you can take the next one, actually. But I'm going to go first one. Jennifer Kemeny has said or asked the question, how are you measuring the quality of hire and has this approach changed since COVID? Marissa, I'm going to go with you. We're going to go alternate on this one because we probably don't have time.
I mean, it's not something that we're necessarily going to be accountable for in all of the projects that we have, simply because once they get hired, generally speaking, our work is done. We do obviously keep an eye out anecdotally for retention, but it's not something that we're sort of actively on top of more than, you know, more than usual or anything. But Andrea, perhaps retention rates are probably significantly higher as a result of the uncertainty of the market.
On that note, actually, retention used to be a good measure, but now if everyone's being super defensive, actually, maybe you're still hiring not necessarily better quality, but they're just hanging on in there because there's nowhere else to go. They don't want to go. So it is a very interesting idea as to how do you measure quality of hire always being a very amorphous topic. Thank you for that, Jennifer. I don't think we've answered your question, but we've given it a go. Right, next one. Adam, you want to ask this?
Yeah, so Pooja's asked if the expectation on skills and capability for potential candidates has changed over the last 6 to 8 months. So I think what that's alluding to is, are you expecting higher quality of people coming to you for interviews? Andrea?
Do you mean recruiters or you mean just in general?
Candidates.
No, I don't think we're expecting them to be better. I mean, obviously, because we can hire in a distributed manner now, it does mean that we can widen that talent pool, which is fantastic, you know, for some of the locations where there's a restricted number of people. But we were already working on our diversity targets and that sort of thing. So I think it has made an impact that, you know, there are a lot more women that are willing to look at roles that they might have not been able to consider before because of the amount of travel or because it was in a particular location. So we have seen an improvement there. It's too early to actually say whether it's completely linked to this, but my gut is saying it is.
Yeah. Okay, good stuff. Thanks, Pooja. We've got Oscar Major here. Great to see you, by the way, Oscar. We need to catch up. It's been a long while. He asked the question. Oh, shit. I've actually deleted the question.
No, it's still there.
Have I failed to answer it? Oh, I've screwed this up. I can't believe it.
It's at the bottom.
Oh, here we go. Right, sorry, Oscar.
It's
sorry
in different places depending on who's looking.
All right, I got it, yeah. All right. Have you shifted posted jobs externally and focused to sourcing rather than basically have you stopped posting jobs and has there been a shift to sourcing versus posting to avoid the candidate flow?
This is like a red hot topic right now across our organization, because it's really easy to sit there and read applications rather than actually go find the 10 people who are qualified. So on the whole, no, we haven't stopped posting jobs. My big job at the moment and the managers and directors in my organization's big job is to get people to prioritize sourcing and going after doing their job, rather than reviewing 50 trillion applications that are irrelevant. And then even worse, screening those people if, you know, you're actually talking to people and getting really bad conversion at the top of the funnel.
Yeah, good stuff. So that probably is the answer of yes to that. Go ahead, Adam, ask that question.
So Sebastian's asked the most popular question on here with 5 votes to ask this question. How do you measure the how of recruiters? What's the optimal balance between candidate feedback, hiring manager feedback, and cross-collaboration within your peers in the TA teams?
So do we understand the question? I'm just reading it again. I think what Sebastian's meaning is there's lots of things this person is doing as a recruiter. How do you measure or what's the optimal balance between those activities? Like percentages. We're going to just do rough cuts on this, folks. So what are your thoughts? Both of Andrea and Marissa could give a go, actually.
I mean, those 3 things that he's outlined are important. I wouldn't say that's everything that they're doing, but feedback is always going to be coming into, I don't know, what is it, 10% of the role a week? I'm picking numbers like this because there's so many things that people are doing, you know, those are only some aspects. But I think a recruiter's role now, it is so varied and so broad, and that cross-collaboration piece and that ability to actually continue to talk with all their colleagues and their peers, that's more important than ever. I mean, we've done a lot around engagement and collaboration across the different teams, probably more this year than previous years. It's really important.
Good stuff. I think this is a tough question to answer, actually. But Marissa, I wonder whether you could try and give this a crack.
Number of hires, so the quantitative measures that a recruiter delivers, whatever those quantitative measures you have, should be about 50%, and qualitative measures like feedback, etc. If you were doing a performance review, that would be the other 50%. I've always managed my teams to that kind of rough ratio.
Yeah, I think a good heuristic as well. That's excellent. Yeah. Okay, let's have a look at this from David Dand. David's asked, how are you overcoming a very nervy candidate market to achieve your hiring targets? So this is referring, I guess, to the highly skilled in demand. These are people
struggling
to move. How are you overcoming that? How are you making the case to say, hey, listen, this is a better opportunity than what you're in? So again, both of you guys, let's try and get this answered. Perhaps go to you first, Marissa, on this.
I mean, it's tough. It's really tough trying to get people to move roles at the moment if they're in a secure position. But as we would all know, being professionals in this space, it's about the opportunity. And I think in particular, we're working with a lot of organizations that are growing. And I think back to your point, Hung, before about people are sitting there, you know, just hanging out in shit jobs, in shit companies. If you can talk about the opportunity for growth and the fact that the organization is growing, that is they're the two kind of hooks that are going to bring people across. But it's tricky, David. There is no easy answer to that, I don't think.
Yeah. Andrea, do you want to give this a shot as well?
Yeah. I think it's more pronounced in those risk-averse countries like Germany. So it's absolutely been accentuated this year. And I think that the main difference we've made is we start the conversations earlier. We be as proactive as we can be, knowing full well that it's going to take longer to get that prospect to ready to be a candidate. So we are building that into it. And that's why our time to fill will never come down to 15 days. It takes time to nurture those relationships.
That's a really good point. So the tip is, you kind of anticipate it's hard, so you start earlier. You know, you've got to have a more of a CRM. I know you've got a big smile on your face, Adam, but you've got to have like a CRM style approach to it, because this person may not be ready to be pipelined, so to speak, at least not in the same pace. So the same way that we're sort of in the opposite way, we're saying time to hire might have shortened for the people prepared to move. There could be like longer term conversations you need to be having to establish relationship, build brand, all those types of things before they're in a higher ready type experience. Ask the final question, Adam. If you want to give Felix that airing, that would be great.
Okay, so Felix has asked, how do you manage the increased number of applicants and still be inclusive in your requirements? So we kind of asked that question already, but inclusivity is the key word in here to focus on, I think.
I'll hand over to Andrea because you sort of talked about your example before.
Yeah, I mean, look, inclusivity is a huge piece for us anyway. And, you know, we're looking at people from very different aspects. We're hiring for potential. We also are, you know, I think we spend a lot of time looking at the robustness of our process to make sure that it is truly inclusive and having those conversations with people up front. I will say more people now talk about their requirements up front than they would have done 6 months ago. And that's welcomed. And I don't think that's ever going to change now. And I'm so glad to see that.
Yeah. I mean, inclusivity should be built into all of your processes, whether it's sourcing, applications, assessment, testing, whatever. It just needs to be part of your DNA. I think the one thing that a lot of people are airing grievances about at the moment, and Andrea has already addressed it, is the feedback and people not getting feedback on their application. So if you want to be awesome and you want to be a good human, make sure you build that into your process as well.
Can I add one thing to that, actually? This is a public service request to recruiters from me. Please stop asking for degrees for jobs where degrees are not necessary. Not everybody had the opportunity to go to university, but they are potentially just as good at doing the job as people who went to university.
Yeah, I think we can do a here on that, because obviously academic achievement, especially in certain countries, is very tightly linked actually to your economic circumstances. And that then is also linked to things like ethnicity, gender, social class, et cetera, particularly in the UK. You just have to look at, you know, who the people in the cabinet. It's basically Eton all the time. You know, that is it. That's the demographic we choose our political leadership from. And it's not just because they're talented. You know, they have talent. I'm not going to deny that. Although, you know, recent times you could probably ask
a serious question. I'll deny it for you if you like.
You can ask some serious questions. But the opportunity is a big kind of sort of door that you're locking when you're saying you need to have a 2-1 or a first class degree or whatever it is from this institution, unless the academic content of that degree happens to be relevant. In many cases, we know that that isn't the case. That's about it, folks. I think we could continue talking about this. This is a super interesting conversation. I do want to thank Marissa Bryan and Andrea Marston for joining us today and sharing your knowledge and wisdom with us. It's been great having you on. Hope you've had a good time. Everybody, thank you so much for your time also and watching this show and wherever you are on Crowdcast, LinkedIn, Facebook, and everywhere else. Been great having you here. If you are interested in content like this, follow the channel, by the way, folks. We do this every week, and we've got an amazing show next week. I think we might be talking about, I said it was an amazing show, and I can't even remember what it was about. I'm so confident in the quality of the guests and the topic. I'm pretty sure it's amazing.
Alan's on, and we're talking about
community, online community.
Yes.
Yeah, we're talking about how do you use online communities to do recruiting. So we've got Alan Bailey from Intel. We've got Rosie Sherry from Indie Hackers. She's not a recruiter, but she's an amazing community manager. She's done some, I think she's a thought leader in our space, really, in a very hidden way. But I've known Rosie for ages, and she's going to come in to talk about how she has not only built communities, but built them in totally different industries, which is something I've never been able to do. Vanessa Rath, who, of course, has built awesome communities in our industry in recruiting. So make sure you join that. It's going to be fantastic. Other than that, have a good weekend, folks. Final thing. Remember our awesome sponsors, CV Check. Free trial on those, folks. If you want to generally improve your due diligence on the people you're hiring, you need a better solution for reference and background checking, CV Check is the business for you to check out. Okay, that's about it, everyone. Thanks for your time. We'll see you next week. No one's saying goodbye. I thought everyone was meant to be saying goodbye, but they didn't. So I just booted them off. I hope that was okay.
That was that was one of my favorite Brain Food Lives this year. Andrea and Marissa are both really, really rich with useful information, and that was a really good show.
I agree, and to be honest with you, whenever I speak to people of that type of just talent level, I feel that it's almost like it's wrong for four people to be on screen at any one time, because you really want to hear from that person a bit more. So maybe we need to kind of massage the format a little bit, although I don't know, I kind of like the panel thing, and then there's a bit in and out, so it may be not a bad thing to tease it a little bit, and we can always get Marissa and Andrea back if they're keen to do it.
They've both been on before, have they not, at some point?
I actually think it may have been Marissa's debut, and I think Andrea might well have done, but I've kind of been on screen with Andrea before, so I might be getting confused on context there, a great show. Enjoyed it a lot. Next week's going to be amazing as well. It's looking good, man. Listen, by the way, all the people who are still here, thank you so much for your support. Great to see the questions coming in. I think we managed to get through it. I think the format is kind of working okay. Like I say, do make sure you follow the channel. We're going to do this every week. And if you have any feedback, folks, guests or topics or anything like that you care about, please do let me know. Email me. Let me just type my email in there, in the chat or whatever. In fact, you can just chat it in here, because the chat stays kind of live for us, and we can keep sort of go back to it. But if you've got any kind of guests or topics that you think we're not covering and you want us to do, please do that, because that would be amazing. All right, before we kick everyone else, Adam, what are you doing the weekend, man? Anything interesting?
Hopefully some exercise and just hanging out with my kids. That's probably it. I need this weekend now, so
yeah, you just chill out, man. I mean, take the day. The day should finish for you, hopefully, today. Like, one of the reasons why I do Brain Food on Friday and we're sticking to it is because I think the weekend should start earlier, and dude, just take it off, it's fine.
All right, cheers,
see you later.
See ya. Bye.
Well, how do we do in the poll, by the way? Oh wow, 92.3% reckon time to hire has actually got shorter. That's really fascinating. Although we had insight on why that was. All right, folks, I think I'm going to have a bath.